Blog Talk Radio.
Start it.
Johnny on the track.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga.
Yeah. What is going on now? Now, forgive me. I did not mean to land with the last word being what you guys heard. But nonetheless, we're all adults here. We know what it is. This is another episode of Inside the Octagon. I am one of your hosts, Colin Lil. On the other end is my man, Leo Shower. Leo, brother, what is going on with you?
Hey, what's going down, Kalani? Good to hear from you, and just another great week of fight talk, so let's just get into it.
Talk about another great week. Leo, we are 10 days away, my man, 10 days away from really one of the biggest spectacles, biggest events, circus-type events, however you want to describe it, in combat sports history. Obviously, I'm talking about the August 26th showdown between boxing and MMA, USA versus Ireland, Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. Real quick, 10 days out, what are your feelings now that we're this close to the event?
Well, it seems like since the press conferences went on a few weeks ago, it's been kind of up and down. You know, that fight hype has been up and down. You know, there was the open workouts a couple of weeks, or last week really, for Floyd Mayweather. I mean, it's just the quintessential boxing event where it's just everything is surrounding the two headliners. You know, they announced the undercard not too long ago, and you know, nothing too impressive. So the show is going to really rely on Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. So hopefully these guys are going to deliver a really good show. And you know, I'm sure the fans are expecting some real fireworks, some, you know, a big spectacle. But as far as the hype has been going, I mean, like I said, it's been up and down. Like after the last couple of press conferences, everything kind of seemed to flatline a little bit, and then everything picked up again with the Paulo Malignaggi situation with Conor McGregor. And now, you know, these guys are still going back and forth on social media. So I think it's pretty fair. I mean, I think there's enough attention on the fight where people are going to be tuning in. It's just a matter of these guys to see if they deliver on fight night.
No, indeed. And one of the things that like you pointed out, that really kind of almost derailed the excitement for the event was the long break we had between the press conference tour and then the actual fight. Now, again, you can't have them the week of, but that certainly, you know, it was at a fever pitch. Everyone was ready. It's like, okay, a month and a half later, we're going to fight. And it's like, oh, well, wait a minute now. But as the fight's getting closer, you knew things were going to start coming up. You knew that the attention towards it was going to start picking up. One of the downfalls that I think is happening with this event is the UFC does not have anything to do with the promotion of it. And I know that would have meant that the UFC now is going to have to get a cut of the money. And I know Mayweather Productions, I know McGregor especially, look, we're already splitting the pie. No need for extra slices being away. But I think it was something where if the UFC was also involved, the MMA fans itself, Fox Sports 1, they could get on it a little bit more with their weekly shows. For an event this big, even though it was given on Showtime, I really do wish that more of a production was being put behind it. Showtime does have its all-access show, but that's once a week. It's 30 minutes. I just wish there was a little bit more. I know they can't do it, but I wish HBO's Max Kellerman, somebody like that for Showtime, would have a sit-down with both Mayweather and McGregor at the table in the same room with each other and do kind of a one-on-one with one another and kind of get that going. I think that would be golden. What do you think about the production going into it? Has it been fair going into the fight, or could they have done a better job?
No, I agree with you that it would probably be a better show if the UFC were involved in production. And it seemed like that was kind of heading towards that way last week when the UFC applied to become a co-promoter with the event. I think it's a little bit too late for that. But I think they realize that they're really marketing this fight to mostly MMA fans. I think the boxing fans are more excited about the fight that's happening a couple of weeks later between Triple G and Canelo Alvarez. I think the boxing fans have really, really put all their eggs in that basket. And they're really marketing this fight mostly to MMA fans. And, you know, a lot of the casual fans were just interested in seeing what these two are going to do to each other. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the hype train. You know, these two guys are some of the best trash talkers. They're some of the best combat athletes in the world. But I agree that it would be a bigger spectacle if the UFC were more involved in production. And I think that they're better at catering to the millennials, you know, the younger fan, the 18 to 35 audience that really knows who McGregor is. I think this is the main audience that they should be targeting to. And I do think that it's fair promotion. Showtime is doing a pretty decent job, but there's just not been enough hype. I haven't heard enough casual fans talking about you know, the promotion itself. Everybody knows the fight is happening, but there hasn't been a whole lot that you can see on free TV or anything like that. I think one big plus is that the preliminary fights are going to be on free Fox. So that's something that the UFC fans are kind of accustomed to. You know, you see the beginning of the product on free television, and then you just kind of graduate into the pay-per-view. So I think in that sense, it does seem like your normal UFC pay-per-view night on a Saturday night. But I think they kind of mismanaged a few steps here and only doing this the boxing way. I mean, it feels like an absolute boxing event, but it doesn't feel enough like there's any UFC involvement into this card.
Yeah, and again, I totally understand, you know, like I was pointing out earlier, that if they were, the UFC will look at it and say, look, if we're going to put this money into the production, the camera crew, the travel and whatnot, we obviously want to get a percentage of the revenue of this fight. And I know, you know, Mayweather Promotions and McGregor Sports and Entertainment Promotions, they're like, yeah, we're not trying to do that already. We're trying to make as much as we possibly can. So I get it from that sense. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, it feels kind of flat. Now, I understand that the boxing community and the boxing writers and their followers, they have almost made a stance and saying, well, we're going to cover this fight as little as possible. In fact, we may not even mention it whatsoever. And ticket sales have shown that as well, that the fight isn't sold out yet. But if you look at the one for Triple G and Canelo, that's already sold out. In your opinion, do you think the boxing world is maybe putting Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor on notice that, one, Floyd, we're sick of your antics, we're sick of your overpriced tickets, and the fact that you don't give us an actual fight, instead you give us a defensive match, which, credit to you, but it's not really that entertaining. And Conor, until you earn your way in here, we're not interested in seeing a quote-unquote freak show enter our pressure sport of the sweet science. Do you think the boxing world is trying to send a message to Mayweather and McGregor?
Yeah, I think so, especially to Mayweather. I think at this point, everybody in the boxing community is just kind of tired of Floyd Mayweather doing what Floyd Mayweather does, which is kind of, he cons you out of your money. You're expecting the fight of the century, especially, you know, you think especially of the fight against Manny Pacquiao. It was the fight of the century, the fight to end all fights for, you know, the lower weight classes. And then we got a pretty boring display between these two. Really nothing happened in the whole fight. And I think the boxing fans are just accustomed to that Floyd Mayweather. You know, he's going to tell you every time that he's going out there to look for a knockout and be exciting. But at the end of the day, you're just getting a Floyd Mayweather fight with just him, you know, doing what he does best. He's being a defensive genius. You can't touch him. You can't catch him. And then he's just going to turn it up in the later rounds and just kind of, you know, coast for a decision. So, yes, I think the boxing fans have just had it with Floyd Mayweather. And I think they might be banking a little bit on the more naive, if you will, MMA fans that don't necessarily follow boxing and aren't as familiar with Floyd Mayweather's fight promotion, and that, you know, everybody is expecting a spectacle or a big show, and they might just be disappointed with a typical Floyd Mayweather performance.
No, definitely. You hit it on the head there because, yeah, when the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight went on, I'll admit it to you, Leo, I honestly thought that would have been the fight where Mayweather said, I'm going to show you guys why you've been wrong for the last 5 years. I'm going to show you why I'm undefeated. I'm going to show you why I'm the best ever, or, you know, TBT or TMT. I'm also show you that as good as somebody in this sport is, when compared to me, the arms are too short to box with a guy. I really thought Floyd was going to go out and say, this is going to be the fight where I take a chance, where I go out there and I show the world why I went from pretty boy Floyd to money Floyd, why I'm the best to ever do it, why I'm undefeated, why I can't be touched. I honestly thought that was going to happen. When I saw the fight, I was like, okay, it's a typical Mayweather show. You know, did real good with the jab, took away some things from Pacquiao. Okay, good. But I, too, was in a sense disappointed of what I thought was going to happen. But I also knew going into it, hey, look, we know Floyd's game plan. You know, we know, look, you're a Packers fan. We know what Green Bay is going to do. Sure, every now and then the running back might have some big games. But when I got Aaron standing behind center, you really think my offense is going to be around the run game? Hell no. So we knew what Floyd was going to do. Unfortunately, our expectations of what Manny Pacquiao could do to him was higher than obviously what the end result was. I think the boxing community is saying they kind of, in a sense, feel not only are they going to be duped by Floyd Mayweather again, but they also feel that they can't trust Floyd to live up to his word. Because I can guarantee you, if Floyd was the type of guy to where when the big fights came out, he did put his foot down and said, I'm going to make a stance and I'm gonna put on an ass whooping towards you, I guarantee you the boxing world will say, yeah, Floyd's going to go out there and do what he did to Manny Pacquiao, do what he did to Canelo, do what he did to De La Hoya. But considering how he did in some of those performances, they're like, yeah, Floyd's just going to battle him for 12 rounds and Conor's not going to look good at all. So it's not really interesting, to say the least. But Leo, now we're talking about, you know, the lack of interest in the fight from the boxing world. But some interest might have been thrown into the pot here. The Nevada State Athletic Commission has agreed for one fight to allow Mayweather and McGregor to fight with 8-ounce gloves. Now, for people that don't know, the Nevada State Athletic Commission states that in the sport of boxing, if you fight at 147 pounds or higher, you must fight with 10-ounce gloves on. This is due to previous injuries and, unfortunately, some untimely deaths in the sport of boxing at the lower weight classes in the past when they use smaller gloves. So they said, hey, the bigger you get, you got to use 10-ounce gloves. But they're saying for this one, considering that Floyd generally is a 147-pound fighter, but he's taking on an MMA guy who's used to fighting with 4-ounce gloves, they'll make the one exception. With the 8-ounce gloves, and Mayweather saying, hey, he can use any brand of gloves he wants to, doesn't matter. Because remember, that was a small point. McGregor was saying he doesn't want me wearing certain gloves. They can't be from Mexico. They can't be made out of horsehair. Now with the smaller gloves, who do you think this favors now going into the fight? Does it kind of lean a little bit towards Conor, or is it still highly in favor of McGregor? I mean, of Mayweather.
Well, I think this is a very major misstep by the camp of Floyd Mayweather. I think the trash talking got a little bit out of hand, and I don't think he was expecting the Nevada Commission to actually approve the 8-ounce gloves as opposed to the 10-ounce gloves. I think Floyd Mayweather, you know, he just let his trash talking get a little bit out of hand, and he was not expecting the result that they got. And I think it favors Conor McGregor, because Conor is already used to fighting in 4-ounce gloves, and you know those 2 extra ounces on Floyd's gloves, that was just a bigger shield for Floyd to cover his head, to cover his body. And now Conor can, you know, there's a smaller space for Conor to be able to sneak something in there. And, you know, that was a big point of contention for Conor McGregor, you know, when the fight was announced at first. Was fans were talking about Conor, you know, tends to gas in fights. He's not used to fighting in 10-ounce gloves, so he might just, you know, get a little bit too tired. His hands might be heavy by the later rounds. So I think this only favors Conor McGregor. I don't know what Floyd was really expecting out of offering to fight in 8-ounce gloves. I don't think it really benefits him. Maybe he thinks that, you know, he's already the faster guy and, you know, he's more elusive. Maybe he thinks that's just going to make his hand speed a little bit better. But I think, if anything, this just favors Conor McGregor. And it's a better storyline. You know, you want to think that Conor McGregor has a chance to win this fight, and this just kind of evens the playing field just a little bit, not too much, but it evens it just enough where people can start imagining things and maybe thinking that Conor has a chance to pull off the amazing upset.
Now, that's interesting that you say that you think that this was kind of like a wolf ticket strategy by Floyd Mayweather. Is, oh, yeah, let's fight with smaller gloves. Sure. They'll never – wait, what you say? They approved it? That's interesting that you said that. That could be the case. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that, oh, God, I know we just talked about it, Leo. I know we just talked about it. I'm kind of thinking Floyd's game plan might be to do what he's actually saying. I'm thinking Floyd might say, you know, a lot of you guys don't remember, but when I was known as Pretty Boy Floyd, I was knocking people out. In fact, I'll pull it up real quick. But Floyd's like, you know, when I was knocking people out pre-2000s, you know, when I started getting the big fights, I had 22 wins with 15 KOs. So, granted, you know, maybe I didn't have the one punch knockout, but with my speed, quickness, and the flurry of punches, you know, kind of like we see with some guys in MMA, just overwhelming you with punches, it wears on guys, kind of like the Diaz brothers. Not one punch knockout power, but just the volume of punches is going to wear on you. I'm thinking he might say, yeah, give me the smaller gloves because of my brittle hands, I don't have that power. But with 8-ounce gloves, it gives me just a little bit more. So when I tag you, it's going to sting just that much more. And I'm going to test that so-called chin and that body of yours. Leo, do you think with the 8-ounce gloves, and you said, you know, it does favor Conor a little bit more, do you think maybe Floyd might be thinking, I really am going to try to go for the knockout in this fight?
Well, there's always the element of surprise that, you know, we don't know what Conor McGregor is going to do. So, and you know, he's never really been in a professional boxing fight, especially against a guy like Floyd. So there's always that lingering thought that, hey, maybe Floyd can just kind of pull off the knockout here and he wants to finish him early. You know, the media asked him at the open workout last week if he thought it would be a moral victory for Conor McGregor to last 12 rounds with him, and he said it would be a moral victory. So Floyd is at least saying publicly that he's looking for the finish, that he doesn't want a decision victory, that would not be enough for him. But I think that's just Floyd being Floyd. You know, he wants to sell you those wolf tickets, and he wants people to think that he's going to go out there and put an exciting performance. I think Floyd is just very, very happy to win 7 rounds and coast to a victory and, you know, just do what he does. I don't think he wants to really do anything out of character for him and you know, have that one in his record, that 49-1. That's going to be devastating for him and possibly for the sport of boxing. I don't think he wants to risk that. I think he's more than happy to just go in there and coast to a victory. If he finds an opening, and if Conor McGregor, I think, in my opinion, this is where Floyd could really finish Conor is, you know, like we talked about last week, going for the body and then waiting for Conor McGregor to fatigue. And, you know, fatigue makes the bravest men into cowards. So I think Floyd is going to really want to capitalize on that and see if Conor starts to tire out in the middle to later rounds and then see if he can land a big punch that would put him away.
Boy, does somebody pay attention to John Jones when he's giving interviews. Bravo. Bravo for that fatigue brings out the see, you said it best. I can't even repeat it. Bravo.
Yeah.
Bravo. But no, I agree with you. I completely agree with that statement. And, yes, I know. Maybe I'm just getting a little too excited here. Maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit much. And that's fine. But I would also say this, just to counter it, not for the sake of the show, but just to try to counter what you're saying to say, okay, but here could be the other side. If you look back at some of Floyd's previous fights, not recently, but some of his fights throughout history, he has also shown you that I am willing to stand and fight guys and not just run. Before the ending, his fight with Victor Ortiz, again, I know it was a controversial ending, but his fight with Victor Ortiz, if you watched it, he wasn't doing a lot of running around. He actually started pressing forward a little bit more and walking Victor Ortiz down. But then obviously the ending, the headbutt and the controversial knockout happened, so we couldn't see what was going to happen next. Zab Judah was beating Floyd in the first few rounds of their fight. But once Floyd got a hold of him, if people recognize round 7, 8, and 9, you start seeing Floyd standing toe-to-toe with Zab and walking him down some, and then that's when Zab got frustrated, hit him low. Against Miguel Cotto, against Canelo Alvarez, against Diego Corrales, which I believe was at 130, 135 pounds, he was doing the same thing with those guys, standing in front of them and willing to take the blows. That's why against Cotto, he had the busted nose because he stood in front of them. Everyone's thinking Conor's going to come in and do a Marcus Maidana, and he very well might do it. Just come in there very wild, throw a bunch of punches, try to make it a brawl inside a telephone booth. He might do that. But Floyd has shown that if I can figure out what you're trying to do, and if I feel your punches, and I feel that you're not going to, you know, outside of a flash knockout like Marquez knocked out Pacquiao with straight right, outside of one of those, I don't feel that you got the power to just put me on my ass, then I'm going to come at you. And I think Mayweather might be thinking, that's what I may do if I could figure out not only what he's going to do in the first couple of rounds, but if I could also feel that left hand and say, it's not as strong as people said it is, here I come. Again, he may do what you were saying, Leo, and I would not be surprised whatsoever. But I think if Floyd could figure out that Mayweather doesn't have that one-punch knockout cannon like everyone in MMA knows, then I think Floyd might say, I'm going to show you guys why you need to stick to MMA and don't come over to my world of boxing because we're the more superior fighters. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out when it finally does happen. And we'll find out in the 80s.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, the experts are saying, you know, a lot of the experts, especially the snobbier, if you will, boxing experts are saying that Conor McGregor's not even going to win a round. I don't think that's accurate. I think Conor's going to come out guns blazing in the first couple of rounds. And I think Floyd is just going to be happy to let him do that. I think Floyd is going to take a round or two to read what Conor McGregor is going to be doing. But Floyd is claiming that he already knows Conor McGregor's game plan. He's going to go out there and try to switch stances and try to confuse Floyd into you know, possibly circling into Conor's power. But I don't think Floyd is going to really play any kind of, try to knock you out game early in the fight. If you know one of boxing's greatest personalities, Eric Kelly, he's a very interesting boxing trainer. He did an interview not too long ago claiming that Floyd Mayweather is a six-round fighter. And he didn't mean that as a knock. He was saying that Floyd Mayweather is a six-round fighter and that he's going to let you do whatever you want in the first couple of rounds. And then he's just going to absolutely turn it up in the last six rounds of the fight, maybe seven rounds. And he's just going to school you. He's just going to run circles around you. His cardio is just getting kicked in, and you know, in the middle of the fight. So I think I expect a lot of that from Floyd Mayweather, especially against an unproven boxer like Conor McGregor. I think he's just going to read Conor McGregor in the first couple of rounds, see what he's got to show, and then he's just going to start turning it up and pull Conor into deep waters and just try to pick him apart and give him a boxing lesson late in the fight.
No, certainly, and I agree with that assessment. I agree with that assessment. If you notice what I was saying earlier, the first couple of rounds when he's trying to figure you out, that's typical Floyd. He wants to see how you're going to come at him, especially, like as you pointed out earlier, he wants to protect his O. He wants to protect his investment of being undefeated. So instead of just coming out guns blazing right away, let me figure out what you're going to do. I'm so smart in the sport of boxing that I can read you for the first few rounds and say, okay, this is what you're going to do. For some guys, i.e. Shane Mosley, we've seen him decipher what he was going to do a little bit earlier, especially after that right hand. He woke up and said, okay, hell no, I'm not going to do that again. Then he started to catch him a little bit more often. With other fighters, as Maidana or Cotto or De La Hoya, we do see that it takes him a few extra rounds. It just, and Zab Judah as well. It just depends on your speed and how well you disguise what you're doing. And I think, honestly, it's a short time, but this is, again, why I tell you, Leo, if McGregor had close to a full year of preparing, it would favor him just slightly better in success because he can learn different ways of disguising what he's trying to do. I've always tested that the two ways to beat Floyd Mayweather, and again, you know, who knows for sure, but the two ways to beat him is you got to have cardio to go 12 rounds as if it's the first round. And you got to have two or three different game plans that you switch up throughout the round. You got to go 2 to 3 rounds one style, 2 to 3 rounds a completely different style, then 2 rounds kind of somewhere in the middle, and you got to keep going back and forth, and you got to keep Mayweather guessing. And that's what I thought McGregor would have had a better chance at. So I completely agree with that assessment. We'll see, one, if it goes 6 rounds, and two, if it does, what Mayweather decides to do, because we all know, given Conor's cardio, he may not even be himself again after 6 rounds of being in there with the world's greatest boxer right now. Now, excuse me, apologies. Now, with ticket sales not being sold out right now, again, they're a little bit higher than what MMA fans are used to, and they're certainly at the price that boxing fans are like, yeah, we're not into buying those consistently. Do you think with 10 days left, with the video of McGregor and Paulie Malignaggi and the 8-ounce gloves and just the attention that's going to start coming around for this fight within the last week and a half, do you think we're going to see ticket sales start to go away, or might we get a WWE, hey, we made a record here, even though you really didn't, but we're just going to say that for the sake of the show. What do you think is going to be the end result with the ticket sales for this event?
Well, this is a very interesting topic in that if you remember last week at the Floyd Mayweather open workouts, Leonard Ellerbe was being asked about ticket sales constantly. And, you know, it started, you know, he started being a little bit annoyed by the questions, and he actually revealed some news saying that they're already at over $60 million in ticket sales. So he says that they're absolutely doing fine. You know, the record for Floyd Mayweather is $72 million at the gate, and that was against Manny Pacquiao. And both sides are really saying that, you know, they're going to blow past that number. They're going to blow past $72 million. It's going to be a sellout, no problem. And, you know, everybody's just kind of overblowing it a little bit. I think there's certainly something to be said about $60 million, you know, 2 weeks out from the fight. I think that's absolutely incredible. That's already a win for both parties. It is a little bit of a black eye saying that, you know, it's only a week and a half away and they still haven't sold out. I think they might sell out. It might not be like a, you know, standing room only type of fight, but I think they are going to sell out the fight. And but at the same time, like we've been talking about, this is a fight that's more targeted more towards both the MMA fan and the casual MMA fan, and not necessarily the boxing fans. I think they've really spoken with their wallet, and you know, they're leaning more towards the Triple G and Canelo fight. That fight has been sold out for, you know, since tickets went up on sale. So I think the boxing fans have really, you know, picked a side on this argument. And it's just up to the MMA fans who, like you said, they're not used to paying this extravagant amount of money for fight tickets. And, you know, it does not help, like, you know, like what we talked about earlier, that undercard is just not the strongest undercard. I think there were some rumors going around that, you know, Irish female boxer Katie Taylor might have been put on the undercard, and that would have been something just there would have been a little bit more interest in something like that. There's more storylines that you can build around it. You know, there's two Irish fighters coming to the United States to try to prove something. But in the end, they just put, you know, these kind of no-name fighters on the undercard that nobody's really interested in watching. You know, I understand from the promotion side that, you know, Floyd Mayweather wants to build these people up and sell tickets for them later. But at the same time, there's really no interest behind that at this time. So it's all falling on Conor and Floyd's shoulders. And like we talked about earlier, Floyd just kind of seems to fall flat when it comes to actual fight night. So people might feel like they're getting a little bit, not necessarily ripped off, but they're not getting the full bang for their money. If Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor don't deliver and then there's a weak undercard, it's a little bit of a hefty price to pay for, you know, several $1,000 tickets. So I do expect the event to be sold out eventually, but I think there is something to be said that they haven't sold out with only 10 days away from the fight.
Generally, in the sport of boxing, just the way that I guess the sport is constructed, they typically do not have these major undercards. It's not, you know, it's not something really to look forward to. It's like, okay, mate, you know, every now and then you'll get one. I know Triple G, he was having Chocolito on his undercard, which was really great. We got to see two of the best boxers in the world going at it every time that Triple G had a fight. So that was always fun. This one, though, a little bit different. They may not be household names to everyone, but one person I'm pretty sure even casual fans are starting to come around to the past couple seasons, Sean Porter, a welterweight contender, he's on the undercard. In fact, he's on the prelim on Fox. So we're getting a high-level, championship-caliber-level fighter on free TV. I think that is superb right there to put Sean Porter. Not only does it give him a chance to get his name out there and expose his skills and talents to more viewers than maybe what he's used to, but also allows us to see such a really good talent to say, hey, we need to pay attention to this guy. He's someone to look out for. Also, we're going to see a super featherweight champion in Gervonta Davis, who really is one of the young superstars in the sport of boxing. Again, a very young man, 22 years old, but he's 18-0 with 17 knockouts. So, you know, he's building his way up there, but he's somebody that you can look at and say, he doesn't fight like Floyd, obviously, with his knockout record, but this is somebody who you can say, if Floyd can mold him correctly, he can be somebody to look out for. He's brash. He's got a pretty good look, even though he's covered with tattoos. But I think that kind of adds to the lore. And he's got a very exciting fighting style. So if he can keep it up and continue to win, that's good. And another interesting bout on there is a light heavyweight bout between Nathan Cleverly and Badu Jack. this is a light heavyweight throwdown between two power hitters. So, again, maybe not full-on household names like you were pointing out, but I certainly believe that if people tune in and watch, it may not live up to – you remember that, Leo, do you remember this movie from the 90s with called Play It to the Bone, Woody Harrelson and Antonio Banderas? Do you remember that boxing movie?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, you know what? Spoiler, anyways, it's been out since the 90s. The basic was it was two down-to-luck boxers. They got the last-minute chance to fight at Las Vegas on the undercard of a Mike Tyson bout, and actually that turned out to be a greater fight than what we all know is the Mike Tyson 2 minutes, and it's a knockout fight. So one of these fights, Sean Porter, Davis, Jacobs, and Cleverly, Jack and Cleverly, Cleverly, these could certainly be fights and matchups where we can say, you know what, if we don't get our bang for our buck in the main event, one of these three fighters or even this bout could be something where we can say, hey, that was exciting right there. So hopefully it's able to live up to it going forward. Talking about going forward and living up to it, Leo, word is coming out, you know, obviously from the press conference last week where McGregor was 7 hours late to talk to the media. He says he plans to fight, continue to fight in not only MMA, but in boxing, go back and forth. Obviously, there's speculation that he could slowly be trying to build a future matchup with Paulie Malignaggi. Paulie says that if Conor McGregor looks decent enough against Floyd Mayweather, even in the losing effort, but looks decent enough, he will certainly take on that bout if that's what Conor wants to do next. What do you think about Conor versus Paulie potentially next year? Do you think Conor can do both boxing and MMA, or will that be too much for him to handle?
I think Conor McGregor's got a long, long, long time left in the fighting game, and he's going to go where the money is, whether that's in boxing or MMA. He's just going to follow the money. And what's interesting is, if you recall, I think it was in the L.A. portion of the McGregor-Mayweather tour, Dana White was wearing a Zuffa Boxing T-shirt, and people were asking, what's the Zuffa Boxing entity all about? And it seemed as though, you know, they were open to promoting boxing events in the future. This may be something to do with it. Conor McGregor's planning to do some boxing in the future, and maybe Zuffa Boxing, this new entity, is going to co-promote with McGregor Promotions and try to put on these boxing events going forward. And that basically cuts out the middleman of Showtime. You know, that's just more money going into the Zuffa pockets. So, I do think that this whole Paulie Malignaggi and Conor McGregor scenario is kind of in an effort to try to build a fight. I don't know that Conor's, you know, if Conor were to win or at least look decent against Floyd Mayweather, I think it would be kind of taking a step backwards, fighting like a Paulie Malignaggi. I think he could possibly build himself a bigger fight, like a Pacquiao, or maybe like one of the younger guys, like a Canelo Alvarez, if he were to win next month. But I completely believe Conor McGregor when he says that he's going to go into both MMA and boxing in the near future. He's just going to follow the money, and he's going to really go where the fans want to see him fight. So I don't doubt Conor McGregor and that he's planning on having a dual combat sports career. It's just a matter of, you know, where the money is going to be that's going to lead him to his next step in his fighting career.
We'll see. Now, obviously, Floyd Mayweather is the great whale. He's Moby Dick, okay? But you also got to look at the optics here. He's been gone for 2 years. He's 40 years old, isn't known for his punching power. So it makes sense why Conor will want to fight him for those reasons. It makes sense why he will maybe want to fight Paulie Malignaggi, as you said, maybe not the biggest name out there, but Malignaggi, a little bit on the back end of his career. In fact, he retired earlier this year. So I would say if Conor's going to continue to do it, picking off some of the older fighters is the smartest way for him to go. Because let's be honest, is he going to take on, you know, 18 to 22 unknown fighters for the most part to build up his record? No, he's not. He's not going to go that route. So he's kind of got to do a springboard a la UFC type deal, what they did with Brock Lesnar. You got to go in there with the deep. You got to go into the deep waters with the big fish. He's got to take on the top name guys right now. Canelo, I know De La Hoya wanted that fight, and I know Canelo and even Conor has kind of talked about it.
But I'll be honest. I think he would need to do what Canelo's been trying to do with Triple G and wait Canelo out so he gets older, because he's in the prime of his career. And given that he's younger than Conor, yeah, I don't know about that matchup. But I could certainly see Paulie Malignaggi, somebody who, again, isn't known for their punching power, isn't overly fast and quick, already retired from the sport, so they already said no mas. And Conor has fought against him, so he's kind of got a feel for what he can do. I would certainly say, why not go that route, someone who's more formidable that he can match up against. Now, if he does do that, could we see future matchups with other guys? Maybe, as you pointed out, a Manny Pacquiao, somebody who looks like he's on the last leg of his career? Sure. But it's all about how Conor looks in the ring against Floyd Mayweather, and that's going to be a big key factor in it right there. So we'll find that out. And real quick, I just want to get your take on this before we move on to other topics. So I know we've been on this ad nauseum, but, hey, next week it's going to be the entire show, so everybody get used to it. The video that we saw of Conor and Malignaggi, the knockdown or the pushdown, what side do you stand on just from your point of view and just from what we was able to see? Do you look at it as a knockdown or a pushdown? Where do you stand on all this?
When we were talking about this whole drama last week, I thought that Paulo Malignaggi had just kind of rained a little bit on Conor's parade, thinking that, you know, Conor can't take body shots, and he basically, you know, from Paulo Malignaggi's perspective, we thought that he had just basically schooled Conor McGregor in the ring. And, you know, from what, you know, 13-second clips that we saw of the sparring footage, it looked like Conor McGregor looked like a pretty decent boxer in the ring. And I am on the side that Conor McGregor knocked him down. I think there was really nasty, I think it was a straight left from Conor McGregor that just basically snapped Paulo Malignaggi's head back. And, you know, from the knockdown footage, it looked like it was a lot of that going on in the right before the knockdown. And you know, I'm on the side that Conor legitimately knocked him down. I can see a little bit how, you know, from where Paulie's coming in saying that Conor's hand dragged him a little bit as he was going down. But if you're a referee or if you're a judge and that's a real fight, what are you going to score that at? That's a legitimate knockdown. You know, that's a 10 count. So I'm a little bit more on Conor's side of the argument here. I think, you know, eventually maybe after the fight, we're going to get to see the whole sparring footage and see, you know, maybe the truth lies in between both of the guys' stories. But I don't see how you can argue that was not a knockdown.
Well, trust me, Paulie Malignaggi is arguing that it's not a knockdown. And he even said that when it happened, when Joe Cortez stepped in, they didn't stop the fight as if it was a knockdown. So, yeah, it's hard to say. The video, you know, it kind of happens so quick because it's not one flash – it's not one punch that landed flush to where you can just say, whoa. It's kind of like one of those, okay, he's getting tagged, bam, you do see a short right land, and then you notice that Malignaggi's already bent over. It looks like he may be leaning back, and Conor's left hand is on top of his head. It didn't look – If you look at Conor's left elbow, and I'm kind of getting nerdy here with the breakdown, but if you look at his left elbow, you don't really see an extension of the left elbow to indicate that it was a major push. You know what I mean? You know, if your arms are bent and they extend out, then that's a push. You don't really see that from Conor. You kind of see it just drop after the head. So I don't know, but I will say this. One, it does bring fire back into the McGregor-Mayweather bout, and it does already set the foundation for a potential McGregor-Malignaggi fight in the near future. So we'll definitely talk more about that in next week's show and whatnot. But let's talk about some other MMA news here. It's inside the Octagon, but we're talking about the Square Circle. But, hey, it is what it is as far as the news. But later on this year, the Great North returns as Jorge St. Pierre is taking on Michael Bisping, but GSP says he is contractually obligated to defend the title against number one contender, the interim champion, Robert Whittaker, if he's able to beat the Brit, Michael Bisping. But GSP also says that if he loses to Bisping, he will retire and walk away from the sport. Hey, I don't got it anymore. Okay. What do you think is most likely to happen? Bisping wins and GSP retires, or GSP wins and he fights again at middleweight against Whittaker? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, ever since there was a little bit of smoke to this fire between the Bisping and GSP fight, I was always on the side of Michael Bisping just kind of going in there and doing what Michael Bisping does. And he's just going to, in my opinion, he's going to dominate a smaller opponent in George St. Pierre. I think George wants to make it a dirty fight and try to play into the wrestling game that he was so known for towards the last fights in his career. But I think Michael Bisping is just too big for him. I think he's going to use a lot of range. And I fully expect Michael Bisping to go in there and defend his title against George St. Pierre. I think it's a misstep for George St. Pierre to say that he's going to retire if he doesn't win. I think, the fans want to believe that George is back and he's going to be dominant and he's going to be, he's just going to pick up right where he left off. I think he's kind of putting a little bit of doubt in the fans' eyes, thinking that, hey, this might be the last time we see Michael Bisping if he doesn't look too good. George St. Pierre, if he doesn't look good. So I don't think George should have really talked about possibly retiring if he were to lose this fight, because I kind of expect him to lose the fight. So I think the fans want to expect a sharp George St. Pierre, and we're going to see if he bulks up a little bit and he's able to dominate the wrestling against Michael Bisping. But if what's more likely, I think Michael Bisping going in there and just picking George St. Pierre apart at range.
It is going to be interesting to see how this could play out between the two. And see, I'm with you as well. I don't want to hear GSP talk about retiring if he loses, because one, as the saying goes, if you're talking about retiring, then you're probably not giving your all into training like you should be. And then two, he's talking about retiring, but dude, you're trying out at a new weight division that you haven't been at yet. So to me, I think that would be unfair if he came back and didn't take one fight at welterweight, whether it's against Tyrone Woodley, Nick Diaz, or whoever. I would certainly say, man, that would be unfortunate if you didn't give it a run at your natural weight division to see, did you really lose it, or did you just take on someone who's bigger than you? And the size factor was just too much to overcome, especially after being away for almost 4 years. So we'll see how it works out for GSP in the near future going forward. Real quick, before I flip it over to you, Leo, who do you think, though, would be GSP would fare better against in a matchup? Michael Bisping or Robert Whittaker? Who do you think the Canadian will look better against at middleweight?
I think neither matchup is necessarily favorable to Michael or to George St. Pierre. I think, like we talked about earlier, George really wants to implement a wrestling heavy game plan. He wants to make it a dirty fight and try to clinch up against you. And if he can find openings on the ground, then he's going to try and submit you. But I don't think either Bisping or Whittaker are really susceptible to that kind of game plan. I think Whittaker is incredible, especially for a guy with a short reach. I think he's got like a 73-inch reach in the middleweight division, which is insane. But he knows how to use that length to try to, keep you at kickboxing range. And then he just does absolutely phenomenal things to you from kickboxing range. And I don't think Michael or George St. Pierre can really handle somebody like a Robert Whittaker. He's a young guy in the prime of his career. And like we talked about Bisping earlier, I think Bisping knows what to do in that sort of situation against a guy like George St. Pierre looking to make it dirty. I think both of these guys can really, really excel at kickboxing range against what we expect to be a smaller opponent in George St. Pierre. I don't think really either guy is a favorable matchup for George St. Pierre, which is another reason why I think George kind of took a misstep in wanting to go for the 185-pound title instead of trying to stick back to his original weight class.
Once again, just by coincidence, maybe just because great minds think alike, I agree with you as well. I don't see a favorable matchup in either way. If he took on Whittaker, he's obviously taking on someone who's got the explosiveness, the punching power to finish him standing up, but also someone who's shown he's pretty good at defending the takedowns. I mean, this guy literally stopped Yoel Romero, a silver medalist in the Olympics, from taking him down at will. Now, again, GSP has shown that he can take down former collegiate wrestlers, former top-level wrestlers, Brazilian jiu-jitsu specialists. So he has shown that he can overcome that, but, not at 185. And now he'd be taking on someone who's far younger than him, a little more spring in their step in Whittaker. So I don't like that matchup with Bisping. Bisping has also shown he's got a good takedown defense, as you said, likes to stay on the outside. So, yeah, unless George plans to come out and really, and I mean really, just surprise people and maybe do a little bit more standing up than we're used to, or land a few moves, or, as I said with the McGregor one, disguise his takedowns a little bit more. GSP, one of the great things about him was his explosiveness when he did the takedown. He literally would do a Goldberg, or for today's WWE fans, a Roman Reigns style of spear, where it would just come like Randy Orton out of nowhere, and it would just be explosive for the double leg. But he's a little bit older now. He's going up in weight. With the time off, the added age, and then the extra weight, will he still have that same explosiveness and acceleration for the takedown? We'll see that later on. But if he doesn't have that, yeah, I think it's going to be a long day in the kitchen for GSP. But hopefully the great one can come back and, you know, hopefully look good and have some success against Bisping later on this year.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one thing I do hope for is that even, you know, win, lose, or draw, I hope we don't see the end of – I mean, if he wins, I think we will be seeing George St. Pierre defend the title. But if he loses, I don't – you know, especially if he loses in a higher weight class, I don't think he should be thinking about retirement. I think he should be thinking about fun fights, you know, to make the fans excited again. He could always work in his way up to another title shot at any weight division he chooses. Anyway, so moving on to the 155-pound division – it seems like the MMA gods are once again not going to give us the Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov fight, because the UFC announced recently that Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee have verbally agreed to fight each other at UFC 216 rather, for the lightweight title. What do you think about this matchup? You know, Kevin Lee is going on a 5-fight win streak. Tony Ferguson has been doing his thing for the last few years. Do you like this matchup, and what do you think about how it's going to go down?
I do like this matchup. We saw after Kevin Lee's victory earlier this year over Michael Chiesa, we did see Ferguson and Lee have their little verbal sparring match with each other during the post-fight interview. So, you know, again, you know, it kind of was already kind of setting the places for there. I don't think that was the intentions, but I just think, you know, these guys naturally are going to speak their mind. And I like the style matchup because Ferguson, as unorthodox and as crazy as his stuff looks, it's all with a purpose. If you ever look, follow him on social media or you see his training videos, he's practicing the half breakdancing capoeira, but I'm going to throw some kicks and elbows at you. He's practicing, I'm going to sprawl then come up and do a front flip spinning elbow on you. He practices all these crazy moves. So even though it looks like he's just kind of, you know, spitballing there, it's a method to the madness. And plus, training with Eddie Bravo, we know he's going to try some crazy stuff. And then with Kevin Lee, he's a young guy who's trying to come up and show that, hey, given my wrestling, given my increased stand-up game, I am going to be showing you that I am one of the top lightweight contenders in this division. I like the fact that these are two big personality guys to where whoever wins, we know we're going to get somebody who, one, is not only active in defending the title, but two, we're going to get somebody that if the day comes where one of them does face off against Conor McGregor, it is going to be a verbal sparring match in itself, and that's going to be fun altogether. So even though we're not getting Khabib and Ferguson like we all want, Ferguson and Lee is the next best thing, and I think it's really going to live up to the hype.
No, I completely agree with you. I think there's no shortage of talent at the top of the UFC 155-pound division. And Kevin Lee, you know, we were sort of laughing at him at his expense a little bit when he came out in that press conference, you know, dressed all funky and then just talking trash left and right about Michael Chiesa. But that really put him on the map. I mean, if it's not for that little show display plus his performance on Fight Night, I don't think we'd be really talking about Kevin Lee contending for a championship against Tony Ferguson. So I think he did absolutely the right move for his career. And now he's up there against one of the top guys in the lightweight division. So I'm really excited for the matchup. I think Kevin Lee is a very, very exciting guy to watch. And Tony Ferguson, like you said, he's just very unorthodox, very crazy stuff that we see from him in the lightweight division. And things just kind of seem to work for him. You know, even if it looks funky and weird, things just kind of fall into place for Tony Ferguson. He's just a very exciting guy to look at. So I'm really excited for the fight. You know, we're not, like you said, we're not getting Khabib, but we're getting a very, very good high-level 155-pound interim title shot between these two guys at UFC 216 in October. Now, we talked about Khabib Nurmagomedov, and Dana White said recently that Khabib is recovering from an injury, and that's why he's not being able to fight Tony Ferguson in October. Now, we've seen this a lot from, you know, a.k.a., you know, Cain Velasquez, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Daniel Cormier, these guys, you know, Luke Rockhold. These guys tend to be injured a lot. Do you think we're going to see a high-level Khabib Nurmagomedov, a high-level Cain Velasquez, if and when these guys decide to come back, hopefully at some point this year?
That's a question that's very hard for any of us to answer there, Leo, because, as you said, as great as these guys are as fighters, there's always something going on with them physically, and it's very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. What's also very unfortunate is the fact that even though they have this history of getting injured, it does seem that they're not doing much to change their ways and going about trying to see, well, how can we get better? Do we need to maybe lessen our sparring training? Maybe we need to decrease the intensity of it. Not completely, but there's certain days where we kind of need to relax a little bit more, get better nutritionists in there, better chiropractors, better whatever it is. I'm not sure, but there is something going on with the AKA team, and it's to the point where you almost can't feel sorry for them, because you got to say, you guys are kind of doing it to yourselves. You know, the definition of his insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. As great as these guys are, they're not going to get different results by doing what they're doing. So until they change their fundamental ways of training and preparing their fighters to fight and making sure that they're ready, not only in weight cutting, but also physically in their training, it's going to continue to happen. And it's unfortunate because Khabib and Cain Velasquez, we know DC's already cemented his legacy. Luke Rockhold's worked on it. But Khabib and Cain, and I know Cain probably already did his because he won a title, but these are two guys who potentially were on the way of being considered two of the greatest to ever step in the cage, not just in their divisions, but all time. But with the injuries, you got to put that asterisk kind of next to it and say, what could have been?
I agree, and I think there's absolutely something to be said about the argument that, you know, all these guys already know how to fight, so they should focus their camps really on strength and conditioning and then just come up with a game plan, you know, on, you know, a couple of weeks before fight night and, you know, let your body rest a little bit more. You know, stop trying to kill each other in camp, because obviously, you know, the injuries are popping up left and right, and these guys are losing significant chunks of their careers, their primes. So it's an absolute wonder to see, you know, guys like Cain Velasquez and Khabib Nurmagomedov fight. But lately it's only been like once a year, once every, you know, a couple of times a year or something like that we see these guys in the cage. And that's because, you know, the injuries are just crippling their careers. So I think, like, I agree with you. These guys should take it a lot easier in training camp and just focus on strength, focus on conditioning, and, you know, start working on game plans a little bit closer up to the fights, because they already know the martial arts aspect of everything. So they should just be working on cardio and strength. So it's a little bit unfortunate that we're not going to be seeing this Khabib and Ferguson fight, but there's also the possibility, you know, Conor McGregor is already talking about wanting to go to Russia at some point and face Khabib Nurmagomedov. Maybe they are saving that fight, you know, keeping that in their back pockets to see Conor McGregor return maybe later this year or at some point early next year to see if Khabib Nurmagomedov can step in there against Conor McGregor. But hey, only time will tell, and we'll see when we see these guys again. Now, speaking of guys at AKA, Daniel Cormier broke his silence after his loss at UFC 214 against John Jones, and he says that he might be thinking about moving up in weight. His natural division, the heavyweight division, has been open for him for a long time, but he refuses to fight in it because he shares the division with Cain Velasquez, his teammate. But now he's talking about, you know, he lost the title at 205, so now he's thinking about maybe the UFC wants to send him up the heavyweight division. Is that a smart move for Daniel Cormier? And what do you think of his career moving forward?
I think it will be a smart move for Daniel Cormier, because as you get older, it's harder and harder to make that weight cut. And for Daniel Cormier, he's always struggled to make it 205. He's just a big guy. Daniel Cormier, you know, he gets criticized for it. He's not a fat person. And I've seen him when he's not training for a bite. He's not a fat dude. You know, he's not like my beautiful self that's got a keg for a stomach. No, he's just a naturally big guy. And he's not, you know, he's not tall like John Jones to where his weight is proportionate. So, you know, he's not one of those type of guys. But making that cut down to 205, it's really, really gruesome. I don't think there's been one time, maybe this last time against Jones, but honestly, even then, I don't think there's been one time where either we didn't hear that DC was having some little struggles, or when it was time for weigh-ins, DC just didn't look sunken in and looked like he was struggling to stand on the scale. So if he does move up to heavyweight, I think it'll be great. And as we said in the last segment, because Kane has been injured so often, it's not like Daniel Cormier has to worry about fighting Kane anytime soon. The guy's always going to be injured. So I think it'd be great. It'll give him a chance to chase history, become a two-division champion, which we've only got three other fighters to claim that so far. And it will further cement his legacy going forward as being one of the greatest of all time to be a former light heavyweight and heavyweight champion in those particular two divisions. Only Randy Couture holds that title. DC could be the second one to do so, you know, unless Jones get there first. It will certainly be something to say, you know what? You didn't beat Jones, but you damn near beat everybody else. Mazel tov.
I agree. I mean, I think it's the move to make for Daniel Cormier if he wants to continue his fight career is move up to his natural weight class. I think the weight cuts have been absolutely draining on him. We've seen him on fight week. He's just looked so absolutely terrible when he's cutting weight, and that's just got to do so much damage to your body, especially for him. You know, he's in his late 30s, like 38, 39 years old. That it's just killer on your body. So I think the best career move for Daniel Cormier, if he wants to continue fighting, is to move up in heavyweight. And another guy who's talking about moving up in the heavyweight division is John Jones. He's basically cleaned out the division. There's maybe the rematch against Gustafsson at 205 for Jones, but he's another guy talking about moving up in weight. Do you think we're going to be seeing a third matchup between John Jones and Daniel Cormier at some point in the future? And do you think it'll be a heavyweight? And if it is a heavyweight, do you think it'll be a different story this time around?
Well, that's a good question. That's a real good question. And I do think that if DC does move up to heavyweight, it will be inevitable that we will see these two fight there at some point. One, the storyline, the rivalry, it's already set in place. But then two, and unless we see a different DC back in the cage, DC has shown, outside of John Jones, and of course we'll see how the heavyweight division goes for him, but outside of John Jones, there's really nobody else in that category that DC can't eventually defeat. Now, of course, we need to see him against guys like Derek Lewis, Mark Hunt, JDS, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see how that goes. But even when he was there, you know, the Frank Mirs, the Roy Nelsons, the Josh Barnett, I know that was in Strikeforce, but still, you know, he's shown that I could hang with some of the top heavyweight in the division anyway. So I definitely think we'll see a third fight. If it's at a heavier weight class, it could potentially benefit DC because he now could probably be the bigger fighter, stronger fighter. He doesn't have to worry about that tremendous weight cut draining his energy. And depending how you scored it, that last fight, DC might have been up 2-0, depending how you scored it going into the third round. If it wasn't for the head kick, who knows? He might have been winning the fight. So DC showed improvements the second time around, now at heavyweight where he doesn't have to drain his body. And with the improvements made in the second one, he does again for the third one. Yeah, it might favor DC slightly more, but there's a reason John Jones is 2-0 against him. It's John freaking Bones Jones.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it would be the better move for Daniel Cormier if he were to move up in weight and see if he can clash against John Jones again. I don't agree with Daniel Cormier when he said after the fight that there was really no rivalry between these two because Daniel lost both of the fights. I think there's absolutely a rivalry between them. Especially in the second fight, DC looked very, very competitive, and you know he just ended up getting caught with that left kick and then getting knocked out. Which, unfortunately, Daniel Cormier says that he doesn't even remember the last few minutes of that fight against John Jones because you know the knockout was so brutal. But I agree with you that you know sans the weight cut, if you take the weight cut out of the equation, I think we're going to see a better Daniel Cormier in the heavyweight division. So. If he does clash against John Jones again, I think it would be a different fight. I still think I would favor John Jones, but Daniel Cormier has such a way of improving fight after fight after fight that I could see it going to a long war decision. For either guy, it could be a split decision or something really really close. And I would like to see these two guys go at it again. I think it needs to happen sooner rather than later because like I've said before, I think Daniel Cormier is a little bit closer to retirement than he is to, you know, another title run. So if these two guys are going to go, you know, at it for a third time, in my heart of hearts, I think it should happen sooner rather than later. So maybe one or two fights from now, we'll see a Daniel Cormier and John Jones 3 this time in the heavyweight division.
No, indeed, indeed. And if we, look, even though Jones beat him twice, they were two very good fights. And I know how the UFC is. I'm not for that. If you beat a guy twice, that's it. If the fights are close and they're entertaining and the buildup is awesome, let them fight a couple more times because, you know, it's not like Cain Velasquez versus JDS where the last two fights Cain just mauled JDS for 10 rounds. No, these were competitive rounds every single time. So I would say, you know what, as long as these two are active, you guys are always going to be 2 to 3 fights away from facing each other again. Why not keep doing it? It's going to bring in the money.
Absolutely, I agree. And as far as the Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, I think that was a trilogy that was just drawn out for – I mean, it's not that it was drawn out for too long, but it was just that these three fights happened back to back to back, and it was just kind of fatiguing to see the same matchup over and over. But I don't think the same is true of Daniel Cormier and John Jones. I think the fans can't get enough of these two going at it both in and outside the cage. So it's the MMA version of Ali Frazier. People just want to see these two guys – fight, and they bring out the best in each other, the best and the worst in each other. So it only makes sense for these two to meet each other down the line. So before UFC 214, it came out in the news recently that John Jones could barely even lift his arm the week of the fight. There was some kind of injury going on with John Jones. He was able to fake it through the medical checks. What do you think is the point of medical checks if these guys are going in there injured anyway? These guys can just fake being healthy and they're going in and fighting anyway, possibly putting themselves in danger. What do you make of this kind of debacle in the medical checks of the fighters?
Well, one, I am glad that Jones was able to fake it till he make it so that we could get that, so we could finally see the fight and get that tremendous finish. But yeah, I kind of question what's the purpose in having all these medical checks for these fighters if they can just fake injuries. Now, again, fighters are going to be injured going into a fight. That's just the nature of the business. With their training, how hard it is, the training partners, there's always going to be nooks and cranks. But when you can't lift a full arm, that's got to be cause for concern. You know, it'd be different if it says, oh, when I lifted, it's stiff, or if, you know, I got some pain, but it's still mobile. We see athletes go through that all the time. But that's like saying, oh, yeah, as a quarterback, I can't even stand up straight. But then I get the shot of I forget what it's called again. You probably remember what it's called. But cortisone. I get that cortisone shot. Hey, I can stand up and I can withstand it now. Well, then there's something probably seriously wrong with you, man, and you need to get that looked at. So I don't know. You know, if you accidentally drink coffee before you get tested by USADA, you get flagged for doping. But apparently if you can't lift your full arm, it's okay. We've even heard this from other fighters. Oh, I had a fracture this, I sprained this. Well, how the hell are you passing your medical? Granted, we're glad that the fight happened, but how the hell are you passing your medicals then during the week? So I don't know if maybe they need to either look more intensely or if it's just like, hey, you know what, even though you can't lift it, are you still good enough to fight? Okay, go out there and drink some water and have at it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that – you know, in this business, there is no such thing as being 100% on fight night. Everybody's going in there with little nagging injuries or even big injuries, as we've seen before. But, man, it is such a misstep for the medical advisors of the UFC to let these guys fight with devastating injuries. Imagine if it were the other way around. Maybe Daniel Cormier couldn't lift his right arm on fight week, and they let him go in there and fight anyway. And then he takes a big head kick on the right side of his head and gets brutally knocked out. That just looks absolutely terrible on both the UFC and their medical division to let these guys fight and, you know, when they can't even properly defend themselves. So, you know, we've heard, you know, guys like Donald Cerrone. He's just an absolute savage. He goes in there and he fakes a lot of these, you know, he fakes being okay when he does the medical checks. And, you know, even in his last fight against Robbie Lawler, you know, a few weeks before they were originally scheduled to fight, he had a staph infection, and he wanted to go in there and fight anyway. But unfortunately, they had to put him on antibiotics, and they knew about the staph. So, you know, obviously they didn't let him go in there and fight. But if it were up to him, he would have gone in there and fight anyway. So I think they need to do a better job of protecting these guys from themselves and, you know, just be a little bit more thorough in the medical checks and not allow these guys to go in there with, you know, possibly career-ending or devastating injuries before, you know, a big fight. I understand that there's a lot of money involved in these fights. You know, it would have been absolutely insane if Daniel Cormier and John Jones had fallen through again. But I think it's better to just cancel a fight than to have something horrible happen to one of these guys and possibly end their career. So I agree with you. I think that there's a little bit more that can be done in terms of fighter safety for their sake. So moving on, Kalani, in other news, Bellator, the big Bellator, has made another signing in their heavyweight division, Frank Mir. So Frank Mir is in a bit of a skid in his career. You know, he hasn't fared the best in the last year or so. But Bellator has gone on and signed Frank Mir. I don't think it's any surprise. I think we were all kind of expecting this signing to happen. What do you think of Frank Mir's future in Bellator? Is there any exciting matchups for him out there? Can he revitalize his career, as so many guys have done towards the latter end of their career? What do you make of the news of Frank Mir signing with Bellator?
Frank Mir going to Bellator, I think it's good that Frank is going to be able to continue his career going forward. The unfortunate thing that's going on with him in the UFC with the failed test over tainted meat that he was eating, but he was trying to protest it. But he's like, look, I'm at an age where I can't afford to sit out for 2 years, or, you know, I can't battle you guys for all this time. I need to be active and go out there. So I think it's good that he's getting a chance to go out, give it another organization, and contest while he still is able to fight at a high level. Frank Mir, you know, he's one of the most underappreciated fighters of all time, whether that's because when he was on the rise early in his career, he had a motorcycle injury that derailed him for a long period of time, or if maybe his attitude and his somewhat cockiness that when Brock Lesnar was around, kind of, you know, with Frank doing a lot of the trash talking, how that came up, especially once he lost the way that he did, if maybe people just weren't able to get around him. Now, he has been a bit inconsistent at times, but he has shown, one, he is one of the best grapplers in the heavyweight division history. Two, outside of maybe some of the elite guys, he can be mostly everybody else in the heavyweight division. So outside of maybe the champion, the number one contender, he can compete or defeat most of the other guys along that ladder. So, you know, for the most part, he's not that far away from contending for a title. I think it'd be good for him in Bellator. There's obviously the Fedor fight, Matt Mitrione, Czech Congo, who he defeated in the UFC. Maybe Czech will want a rematch there. Bobby Lashley could be a good matchup. There are look, if Rampage Jackson wants a matchup there, we probably Chael Sonnen is going to want to call them out as well. I think it'll be good for Frank to be in that organization, also get a chance to maybe do some commentary on the side to kind of transition out of his cage fight days. But in the cage, I think it'll be good for him and Bellator to bring over a former champion, someone with the name, a future Hall of Famer, and somebody who really is going to have some good matchups there in the near future.
I agree. I think this is a really good career move for Frank Mir. Like we said, his UFC career just kind of faltered a little bit, and then the drug test just kind of seemed to you know, throw his career off the rails. But this is a chance for Frank Mir to revitalize his career in Bellator. And like we've said many a time before, they don't even have a heavyweight champion in Bellator. So this could be a fun way to just, you know, either make a tournament or do some kind of number one contender matchup with Frank Mir. Because I think he's got the potential to be a Bellator heavyweight champion. Like you said, there's a lot of matchups out there for him, even like a Sergey Kharitonov. You know, he's been around in the game for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot for Frank Mir to do and revitalize his career. And like you said, there's commentary opportunities for him out there. He's a very, very intelligent guy. You just love to listen to him talk. So he's a very good ambassador for Bellator. And, you know, hopefully this doesn't sour his relationship with the UFC. I think he's a future Hall of Famer. So, but between now and his retirement, I think I'd love to see Frank Mir competing in the heavyweight division in Bellator. And this is a great move for Bellator as well. Like you said, it's a recognizable name for the fans to tune in for. And it's just a good all around signing. Just a typical Bellator move to sign a guy in his late 30s to try to revive his career again. So speaking of guys trying to revive their careers, Tito Ortiz, of all people, considering a comeback. I mean, we've seen Tito Ortiz retire a million times, and then he always comes back. And even in his last fight against Chael Sonnen, he said, that was his last fight. I'm never coming back. And then, sure enough, he's talking about making a comeback. He just had neck surgery recently, and he says, you know, once he's healed up, he wants to come back. What do you think of Tito Ortiz possibly returning? Do you want to see a rematch against Chael Sonnen, or are there any other matchups for Tito out there that you'd be interested in watching?
Talk about a fighter who seems always full of the medical staff when he's at a fight coming up. After every loss, that dude had a broken neck, broken spine. I think in one of his losses, he said, yeah, exactly, a cracked skull. I think in one of them, he actually said this, Leo. I actually was missing my heart for 2 weeks before this until I found it in one of my gym bags the week of the fight. That's why I looked the way I did. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. Tito Ortiz does have a hardcore fan following that is always going to be there to support him. So from a business aspect, I get it because he is going to make good money. He is going to be somewhere pretty high up on the card, if not the main event or the co-main event. So I get it. And then do I want to see a Chael Sonnen rematch? No, not necessarily. Chael has not looked good at all in his two fights since his return back to the cage. Granted, as you get older, and let's face it, it's not like Chael was known for his great athleticism before he got suspended by USADA. So he hasn't looked good. But I will say for Tito Ortiz, with Wanderlei Silva being back, there's a rematch I would love to see. I don't know for the life of me why the UFC never matched those two guys up against each other when they were in the promotion together. So, or maybe we could finally get the Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson matchup we never got to see. And I don't want to spoil it, but with the next fighter we're talking about, maybe we'll see those two go at it again. And we know that's always big money. So, you know, it's not going to be the greatest quality of matches, but I will certainly say there's some interest and intrigue there to see the Huntington Peach bad boy step back in the cage at least one or two more times.
I think, yes, I agree to a certain extent that there is interest in Tito Ortiz, and that, you know, if he wants to continue fighting, then Bellator should, you know, give him a platform and try to feature him a little bit. I don't agree with Tito Ortiz being the main event. I think Bellator, this is what Bellator really kind of drops the ball, is that they make these older fighters the main event, and that's basically all that, you know, the fans have to look forward to. It's kind of a sloppier type of fighting, I think. You know, if you want to feature somebody like Tito Ortiz and try to capitalize off a big name like him, you want to kind of put him in the main event slot or you know, somewhere like a third fight into the main event, and then try to feature your younger fighters, you know, your champions in the main event slots, you know, and that way you just kind of build your own product as opposed to having to, you know, scavenge for old UFC fighters to try to build your cards. I think what you want to do is feature your own younger fighters in the main event slots and just use the Tito Ortiz name to kind of draw the fans in the first place. So if Tito wants to, you know, make a comeback, you know, I'm all for it. I'm not really against the, he hasn't necessarily looked terrible in his last few fights. I think he's still got a little bit of fight left in him, but, you know, taper it down a little bit and try to put him in co-main event slots where the promotion's not necessarily falling all on his shoulders. So, we'll see what Bellator decides to do with the Tito in the next coming months. But you talked about a little bit earlier, another guy looking to make a comeback and possibly sign with Bellator is Chuck Liddell. We haven't seen Chuck in you know, many a years. He's had a job in the UFC, you know, basically a do-nothing job. And then once that came to an end, he was talking about possibly making a comeback in MMA. What do you think about Chuck Liddell making a comeback to fighting? And do you think this is a good move for Bellator to try to sign another UFC veteran?
Chuck Liddell, unfortunately, you know, the way his career ended with the knockouts wasn't a good look. But you know what? He's been away long enough to where maybe you can say, look, even though my age is up there, it's kind of like Rocky VI. I'm still good. If I take all the tests, I can pass them. I know people have pointed out that when he does interviews, he does sound like he's slurring some of his words. And, yeah, that's true. Look, when you fight for a career or you bang your head for a career, that's probably going to happen. But also, Chuck is also known for being a big partier throughout his life. Maybe that could be an issue now that he's not a fighter. Who's to say that in some of these interviews he didn't have a couple of drinks beforehand? Not trying to throw shade at him, but there could be a couple other factors into why maybe Chuck sounds the way he does at times, just because, hey, it is what it is. And again, if he can pass all the medical tests going into a fight, who are we to deny him a chance to go out there and fulfill his dream, make a career, and do what he loves doing? So I wouldn't mind seeing it, but again, just like we were talking about with Tito, it's got to be the proper matchups. Rampage Jackson, Vanderlei Silva. I know Chael Sonnen is selling Wolf tickets towards them. That could possibly be an idea. Tito Ortiz, maybe even Chuck Liddell versus a Fedor matchup, possibly. But as long as it's the proper matchups, I'm all for it. I know it's like a freak show, but hey, and trying to establish yourself, if the other side is doing all these quote unquote, this is legit for the sport, we're going to do the ones that's legit, but we're also going to give you some entertainment as well. And I don't see nothing wrong with it.
I think this might be where I draw the line a little bit with, the older fighter signing with Bellator. I don't think it's a good idea for Chuck to come back. We saw him in his last handful of fights that he was just getting brutally knocked out. He just was not the same Chuck Liddell that we know and love from the early 2000s. So I think this is a little bit too much for me to handle. I don't think I want to see Chuck Liddell try to come back. I mean, it's been, 7-8 years since we last saw him fight. He's in his late 40s now. I think that's just a little bit too late for Chuck to try to make a comeback. I know, if he really wants to fight, there's nobody that can stop him from doing that. And, we all know Bellator is affable to do a signing like that just to try to draw the crowd in. But I'm a little bit skeptical about seeing Chuck Liddell make a return bout. But, like you talked about earlier, there's like a seniors division, quote-unquote, like an unspoken seniors division that's forming in Bellator, and there's possible matchups out there for him. But if it were up to me, I would try to, steer Chuck Liddell from trying to make a comeback and just taking more damage that he really doesn't need.
As I said, if I'm Bellator, as long as he passes all his medical examinations, he passes all the tests, and the doctor's giving him okay, who am I to stop him? It's a business, and I know how that may sound, but guess what? In NASCAR, you turn the wrong way, you burn, and you pass away in that as well. Football, you can easily get paralyzed on a kickoff. So the threat of injury is always going to be there. You can't live your life in fear. And just like we saw with Royce Gracie, Ken Shamrock, and some of these other guys, they're coming back, but they're not, they're not suffering these traumatic injuries. Now, I know Kimbo Slice passed away, but that was from a heart attack. Are we really going to blame Sporty fighting on that? I know Dada 5000 got it, but he also had one of the worst weight cuts we've ever seen in fighting. So there is examples of, well, what about this, what about that? But then also you look at everyone else who's passing it. Hey, as long as these fighters can pass the test, I'm all for it because, again, it brings some names, it brings more eyes to it, and if nothing else, it gives you that what-if factor that we all go into here hoping to expect. And if it's a good show, we talk about it. If it's not a good show, we get to talk about it. Either way, we're talking about it, and that's always good for business.
Well, there you have it, folks. I mean, that's the big news of the week for combat sports. So next time we're back, this time next week, it's going to be fight week. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. It's just going to be absolute madness. I cannot wait to see what the buildup is going to be on fight week. I think UFC said they were going to be doing some embedded. So maybe the promotion is going to kick up a little bit starting on Monday. So, Kalani, anything else on your mind?
No, I mean, I was just going to say, as a foregone warning, next week it is going to be an entire show. Unless other major news comes out, the entire show is going to be Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor, breakdowns, predictions, how we see it going down. We'll see if maybe we can get a guest or two on the show. Unfortunately, we weren't able to today, but it's going to be all Floyd Mayweather, McGregor. Fight week is here. And Leo, I know we're both busy, my man, but me and you got to see about getting down there for some of these events that they're going to be having. It is going to be bonkers to see the Mayweather crowd and the Irish crowd all in one place at once. It's going to be fun, man. That's one of the main things I love being here in Vegas. Leo, let everybody know where they can find you out on social media, man. And once again, thanks for coming on for another great show.
You got it, brother. Thank you. And follow me on Twitter at ShowerLeo.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at KLUA11, that's KLUA11. Also, follow my sports page on Facebook. That is All Things Sports. All Things Sports on Facebook. Until next week, everybody, peace, love, and soul.
Start it. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. I done kept it real